Hey, 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 we've got a special guest. We have Connie, who's in, observing, and we've also got Councillor Ian Ward. Good afternoon, Ian.
Good afternoon, Ian.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
No, thank you for coming in. I know we wanted to meet up, and I wanted to tell you about what we were doing here with our four-piece project and so on and so forth. And I think it's a case of, you know, Vectis Radio will sit nicely on the fence and work with everybody, and hopefully that they will work with them, and we get the results that we want at the end of it.
Okay, I mean, I'm impressed with what I've seen, Ian, and I really do hope it works out well.
Well, with your help and others too, I'm pretty sure it will.
Happy to.
Now, I want to talk about your army career first of all. Okay, because you know, I think of you a lot actually, because my son's actually in the army.
Oh right, what's he in?
You asked a question now. Well, he was training with one lot, and then he's been training with the Marines in the last 6 months, and he's actually in Somalia doing drills now and stuff.
Okay.
So, we all know where that's going to lead to. Mm. So, I mean, how long were you in for? Where did you serve?
I was in the army for 30 years in all, and I served in a myriad of places. The longest period, I suppose, was in Germany, you know, when the British Army on the Rhine was there holding back the Russian hordes and from invading Europe. And I suppose I must have spent maybe 12, 13 years there. But I served in, I did two tours in Northern Ireland, and you know, with my family in Londonderry, and you know, listening to the gunfire across the River Foyle and all that sort of stuff. 2 years in Cyprus. I did a lone service tour in Kenya with the paramilitary arm of the Kenya Police. That was really interesting, and actually, that was a life-changing experience for me, as you know, meeting, living, and working with Kenyans and Africans. And it made me look back to the West, if I can put it that way, and question our values. Because these people were happy. They had nothing. They were poor in comparison with us. But they were happy and they had fulfilled lives. And quite often, our Western values, they questioned. And they were strange to them. And they thought, how can you be like that? You know, and it made me question our values, and it gave me a much better balance of life, and you know, be able to look at a situation and think, what you hear actually may not be correct. And I'm not saying people make mistakes and what have you, but there are different values in life, and maybe our values, we've become too materialistic, too commercial, and say these people had nothing, but actually were comparatively happy.
Do you know what? I think you're so right, and you know, which kind of leads us on to how often do we go to other places, other countries, and observe and take on board what they actually live through and how they live and so on and so forth. I remember going to Corfu very recently and going to the beach one day and thinking, hang on, there's no rush for the car park.
Mm.
Hang on a minute, there isn't a car park. hang on, you go to Sandown, you go to Ryde, you go, and there's always a struggle to park.
Mm.
How is it they haven't got a struggle to park? And it made me think, well, hang on a minute, they've been doing things differently. And do we actually come across, do we actually come over and open our eyes and see how other people live? And I think it's a fascinating point that you make. It really is, because I think sometimes we can be accused of many things, and I think one of them is definitely we live in a bubble and we've got no idea of what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I believe that's very true. And you know, I did about 18 months in Kenya, as I say, changed my life. Other places I went to, Canada, did 2 years in Canada,
yeah,
on the Canadian prairie. Outstanding. It really was. Once again, you see a different type of lifestyle.
Do you want to just get a little bit close to that microphone? It won't hurt you, I promise. Oh, it's red. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I worked and lived with Canadians for 2 years. And once again, they have a different lifestyle and perhaps a different value culture, pretty much like ours. But not quite the same, you know. They were far more relaxed about life. Didn't get het up, you know. And I thought we could learn something from these people.
Would you say we're a bit broken in Britain? I know there's a very famous comedian that was on the Isle of Wight, and he said, "We're broken Britain."
Yeah.
Al Murray. Yeah, I'll be broken.
I don't think so. I think we have perhaps evolved into something that perhaps the more elderly of us think, no, that's not right. But funny enough, when I talk to younger people, they have a different outlook to me, and they can't see a problem. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe my grandparents and great-grandparents thought we were broken. You know, our values were not their values. And maybe we're seeing that now in the younger generation, and we think, oh, the values are broken. It's a difficult one to go down, really, I think. I don't think there's an easy answer to that question.
We're changing, and, mm. I think maybe we need to adapt, and we need to... Well, maybe we'll bring Connie in a moment, but I think it's an interesting thing, because I think there's many age groups, if you like, across Britain that are going through the changes too. I mean, my mum struggles. She's 81, and she struggles with life today, how it is. And there's all sorts of things. The technology, the way people dress, the way people are, and she doesn't get that at all. So I kind of feel sorry for her because she's become detached. And then you go the other end of the scale and you've got 15, 16 year olds. They're completely detached from the elderly and what they've actually gone through and so on and so forth. I think what is lovely is, and I saw this this morning, I think it's wonderful that they're actually honouring the dead from 100 years ago, and they're finding bodies still and they're putting them in graves and so on and so forth, and they're really making a big point of it. I'm just hoping and praying that some of this picks up on the youngsters and they actually, you know, pick up on it too and start learning and knowing a little bit of history. I'm going to come to you now and just fire a question at you, Connie. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, that not blank really. Look. No.
Now, see, that's not your fault. That's a failing in society that you don't know about. And I'm not having to go at your mum or your dad, because I know that you're a nicely turned out young lady. You're very polite and so on and so forth. But we're missing something, aren't we, Ian?
I think we are. I mean, I was born in 1950, so the Second World War wasn't that far away from, you know, my birth date. So it was pretty much part of my growing up. You know, there were still bomb sites and all that sort of stuff was still there. You know, so yes, I'm attached to that recent history. And of course, I've stayed with it, and certainly, you know, being in the army, it's one and the same, really. And because you see the evolution when you're in the army, you see how the forces develop and move away from what they were to what they are now. But I was talking to some youngsters not so long ago, and they didn't know when the Second World War was, and I thought, oh,
Connie,
that's
your chance to shine now.
19. I think it's 1944. Did it start or end?
It did for the Americans.
You see, I'm somewhere. I'm close.
Yeah,
but I didn't take history, and I don't find any interest.
Which is kind of sad, but you know, that's your choice.
Yeah.
First World War, go on. Tell them in.
1914 to 1918.
I knew that.
And the Second World War, 1939 to 1945.
There you go.
I knew the first one.
Okay.
The first
Yeah, eventually. All right. I say, things are changing. And obviously, you know, you're a political figure. You've come in. But I think it's so much more than that. And it's a nice way to sort of... to start an interview, I find, is to get a flavour of what's going on out there without getting too political, without getting down and dirty. It's a case of, you know, what's best for Britain. Do you think we're getting it right as a country at the moment?
I think we are in a situation that is so difficult that there is no right and wrong answer. I look at some things and I think, no, I don't see that's the answer. And other things I do agree with. And if I could translate that locally, the same thing's happening in the Isle of Wight Council. You know, the Isle of Wight Council is having a difficult time. There's no two ways about that. It is having a difficult time. You've got to save £28 million out of the budget. Something's got to give. You know, and I feel very conscious that here we are on the Isle of Wight. We have limited employment, you know, and we're taking this sort of money out of the budget, and people's lives will be affected. You know, employees, the people we provide services to. And I'm very, very conscious of that. And I it concerns me, put it that way. I am worried that we are damaging our community. and we, there's, I say, not a lot we can do about it. We try to do our best. We try to do our best, but inevitably, some damage must be done. Unfortunately,
is it fair to say that okay, the government have enforced the cuts, and we've now got to be a bit more careful with the housekeeping and so on and so forth. So, is the problem here, or are the problem the cuts too deep?
Personally, I think the cuts have become too deep. I mean, I can sympathise with the government when you think, let's go back 5 or 6 years, you know, when local government was, let's say, awash with money comparatively, and you could see that perhaps money wasn't being spent as well as it could have been, right? And I think the government has seen that and has gone, right, okay, we have to make you more efficient, so we will cut your budget, so you have to manage better. And I think the first round did that. I think they've gone, you know, we're now entering the second round, and I think the second round is too far, a step too far. And as I was saying to you earlier, I have spoken to government ministers about this, and Andrew Turner and I are waiting for an appointment with the local government minister soon to actually go and argue the Isle of Wight Council's case.
Are they a little bit out of touch then with the Isle of Wight's needs? Because there was a report we touched on a discussion. We talked about it yesterday and the day before, and we've spoken about it off air. There was a report about wages in the South East. We're part of the South East, and we're £100 behind our counterparts. And you know, and they kind of put it out there that the figures suggest that we're an average wage of around £20,000. Well, I mean, how do you see our average wage on the Isle of Wight?
Well, to be honest, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't have thought. Well, average wages actually mislead, don't they? Because we have people who earn, you know, lots of money here on the Isle of Wight. And if you go to the other end of the scale, there are people who earn a pittance. So if you average those two out, you know, we get 20,000. But I would suspect there's an awful lot of people who don't get anything like 20,000. Yeah. A year, and those are the people we should be concerned about, and I think averaging things out actually mislead
so
people.
But wouldn't it be better though? I mean, just say for instance, this report has gone out on the county press. I'm not blaming the county press; they didn't do the report. Someone else did the report. I question it because it's totally, totally unreasonable, and it might be so out of date. It might be wrong, it's so therefore it's misleading. It doesn't help you and it doesn't help us. So I mean, these things, they should, if they're going to do them properly, so we know exactly where we stand. You know, how big is the problem on the Isle of Wight? Well, that suggests some people on the mainland would be saying, well, if they're all on 20 grand, they're all right, there's no problem.
That's right.
There that's the way I thought when I read it, and I thought, no, hang on a minute, I don't know too many people on 20 grand.
No, I totally agree with you.
If you go into supermarkets, you've probably got hundreds and hundreds of people all working for a lot less than 20 grand. I think that's it's misleading. And maybe it's a case of, political figures have got to stand up and they've got to question those figures. And they've got to question how they do it. Let's do things properly, because it's not helpful. It's a bit like, I'm going to come on to Europe, and I know there's a gigantic leap. I'm just talking as a normal bloke off the street. When people say, in Europe or out of Europe, I'll ask you the question in a moment. If you ask me that question, I don't know. I don't have the figures in front of me. The way I would look at it is, if we're going to go into Europe or come out of Europe, I need to have the figures in front of me. If we're staying in, it costs this, this, and this, and we're going to be better off or not, and vice versa. If we're going to stay in Europe, how much is it going to cost us, and are we going to be better off? I'm not qualified to make that decision. Why aren't I? Because the figures aren't out there, are they? And that's the unfortunate thing. And it's the same now with this report being published this week. That doesn't suggest that the Isle of Wight is a black spot. What it is suggesting is we're slightly behind our counterparts on the mainland. What can we do about it, though, Ian?
I always have this vision that we ought to try and make the Isle of Wight like the Channel Isles, somewhere that's desirable for people to come and live. I'm not saying it isn't a desirable place now, but we have to move up market, if I can put it that way. you know, and with wealth coming in, then salaries will go up to match that, if you like, and we become a much wealthier community. And I know life's not all about money and what have you, but it is something that we all depend upon, isn't it? It's a simple fact of life. And you have wealthy communities and you have poor communities, and I think we need to evolve, really. I think our tourism needs to evolve that market. Can't change overnight. We need to get more investment into the island.
Do you know what I was saying yesterday? I think I was talking to I forget who it was. It was another councillor, and I just sort of said to him, I don't think we make the most of what we've got here on the Isle of Wight. You know, I know we saw a lot of dinosaur adverts last year, and yes, it was nice because there was a film linked to it, but we are so much more than that. You know, we've got one of the Queen's homes down here. It's steeped in history. We've got a steam railway. We've got a castle. You know, we've got all this stuff. And I look at it, and I've said this before to various people. You know, if you go to where they have the programme Doc Martin, incidentally, an island guy actually wrote that or was part of it, Dominic Minghella.
All right, yeah.
And you think, if you could do the same sort of programme for the Isle of Wight, we would be quids in. The trouble is with the dinosaur thing, it's a nice thing, it's a great idea, but it's a one-trip pony, and once it's over, does everyone now think we're all dinosaurs? and we're all dinosaurs that are earning 20 grand, so we're all right. We don't have to help them.
Yeah.
I know we've without sounding desperate, we've now got to, you know, put that message across to the relevant people and say things aren't so good as 20 grand a year for people on the Isle of Wight. Plus, by the way, we're much more than dinosaurs. Mm. We're steeped in history. So I don't think we play to those strengths.
I would agree with you. I think the island is a fantastic place.
I do.
You know, when you look around the UK and you think, hey, there's nothing better than this. You know, I remember saying to my wife, if I was to win the lottery, you know, with the 100 million and what have you, I would still live on the Isle of Wight. You know, I'd have a super home somewhere on the island, but I would still live here. This would be home for me.
I couldn't imagine
myself living anywhere else. And I've been around the world, and I think I'd have homes around the world, you know, something in Florida and something in America, or, you know, but this would be home.
Okay.
No two ways about that.
That's nice to hear, and it's kind of passionate that it's coming across there.
Mm.
So it's like when you get elected, you know that, you know, you're going to stay here because you're an Isle of Wighter, and you know, even though you're not, but you are, you know. I mean, there you are, travelling around the world, but this is where your heart is, and this is where your home is, which is nice to hear. The phone rings. You want to take a call?
Yeah, by
all
means.
Hi, who's this?
Good afternoon, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. Enjoying the weather.
Good. Have you got a question? Have you got a question for our guest?
I have indeed, mate. Yes, I think you'll find that quite a frequent visitor to the island myself, that I find that there's a lot of places closing down, and I can't see what the answer is. Do you know what that is?
I think the island currently is in a state of flux, if you like. I'm talking in particular about the seaside towns. The seaside towns were in their heydays, you know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s. But people have changed. You know, I was only looking this morning in a travel agent window, and there was 7 days in Greece for 170 quid.
Wow.
Right? And then there was a trip to an ice show in England, one night stay, 240. And I'm thinking, how can you compete? So,
you can't, no.
So,
I'll
so,
tell you something,
go on.
Something else, you're saying that £170 for, was it a week in Greece, you said?
Yeah, I think 7 days.
Yeah, well, it's cost me, if you work it out, it's cost me £70 just to get here for 4 days.
Well, I don't doubt it. No,
See, that's one of your bugbears, I'm afraid, with the island.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous place, but it's the ferry companies that are absolutely squeezing you dry.
We hear this all the time, you know, and we have to recognise that the ferry companies are businesses. You know, what I know what Andrew Turner is trying, our MP is trying to do, is to try and basically get the government to recognise that we are an island, because officially we're not recognised as an island.
No.
And so, you know, and maybe we can get some alleviation from, you know, ferry costs and things like that.
It's like you say, you know, the pirates, because if I was to travel overnight, it works out cheaper to travel overnight in the middle of the night when they've got less people on the ferry than what it is to come at peak time. Why is that? It's just being extortionate, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for the ferry companies, but...
It's got to cost the same to run that ferry whether there's two cars on it or whether there's 102 cars on it.
Okay, but you can say exactly the same thing for the airlines. If you want to fly peak time, you will pay top rate. If you want to fly in the middle of the night, you pay bottom rate.
Yeah, but if you fly by, you know, if you're going by air, you're going to cover a distance, so at least 100 miles. What is it to the island? About 3 max, isn't it, from Southampton?
I had quite a long discussion once with the managing director of Whitelink, and he said to me, Ian, how many empty ferries do you think we push across to Solent in a day?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't know. I said, one or two, I suppose. He said, 5 or 6. We are running 5 or 6 empty ferries every day across the Solent.
So why are they? How come they're charging it at a lesser price to travel in the middle of the night when there's only one or two of you on there? Surely all they're doing is making profit. If you look at the figures, if you've got 102 cars on there,
yeah,
it's say £50 a car. Mm. You know, that's a hell of a packet money going into their pocket there. Yeah, if you take two cars, you're only making £100.
You're exactly right. But if you're going to charge. Once again, you know, I'm not an apologist for the ferry companies, but I'm trying to explain their, you know, what they explain to us. If they're going to run that ferry anyway, then why not try and attract as many people onto it as they can? And the way they do that is by having cheaper prices.
Yeah, in the summer they do. You can come over for a day. Yeah. I think it's for something like £35. But you can only see about a fifth, well, not even that. What can you see of the island in a day? About 2% in a day for the amount of attractions that's here in the lovely countryside, etc., etc. So, you know, it's like, so if you want to stay longer, you've got to pay more, yet you're still using the boat only that twice to come over and go back.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I can't argue your logic there.
No, I think a suggestion would be, I mean, maybe we get them in and ask them, but I mean, just say, for instance, I'm quite surprised myself now that they're running 5 vessels that are completely empty. It kind of suggests one of two things, doesn't it? Either people aren't coming across, or they're picking their times to come across, and wouldn't it be better if they came across during the course of the day? Maybe they could drop their prices. Maybe they can have one ferry during the course of the day where they say, right, it's going to be a cheap ferry. That ferry that is normally, you know, quite slow, we'll make it a cheap ferry, get more people onto the Isle of Wight. Therefore, they fill up their ferries, and you know, they won't lose too much over it.
I mean, that's something to discuss with them, isn't it? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you look at the transport side of it. You know, the amount of trailers that must be travelling overnight. Via Red Funnel, for the I noticed that the main company that we'll call it SP Transport has the main contract for doing like Aldi's and most of the supermarket companies. So obviously, are they working in cahoots to get the trailers over at a certain price? If they can do that with the business side of it, why can't they do it with the paying public?
I don't have an answer for you, you know.
It's just extortion, isn't it?
Well, I mean, they need a level of income, don't they? And, you know, despite what people say, the two ferry companies are in competition. So if one can attract the commercial traffic, then, you know, obviously they're better off.
Keith, I've got a question for you.
Yes, mate.
You paid £70.
Yeah, £65.50. That's as long as I come over on the 9 o'clock in the morning. We went back on the 5:30 at night.
Okay, how much?
So that's peak time, Ian.
How much do you want to pay?
Well, I've paid before. I've paid as less as, like you say, I think it was £29.50 for one day.
For one day.
Yeah.
See,
but since the last time when I come over, I've paid more to come over now off peak than what I did in the summer. And I was here for the same amount of time, so I can't run that one out. They must have put their prices up.
Well, that doesn't make sense, and that kind of doesn't add up at all. And that's maybe something we should question them on. But I mean, how much do you want to pay? How much do you feel that is a fair price for you to pay to come across during the course of the day, or you know, not peak hours? You know, I would imagine the peak hours are first thing in the morning, so maybe after 10 o'clock, maybe before 5. I mean, what sort of price do you feel you ought to be paying?
Well, that I would say half of what I'm paying, £30, would be suitable, wouldn't it? But that would be in for a four-day period. What I'm trying to say is, you know, why are they charging more when I'm only using the ferry twice, once over, once back? I know it's on different days.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still only one sort of trip, isn't it?
It is, but I'm just
saying...
So
I'm sounding a bit silly here. Perhaps I'm not grasping the idea of it all.
No, I understand your point. What you're saying is, if you come on a day trip, you do two journeys. And if you come on a longer trip, you're still only doing two journeys.
That's right.
So why the difference in price? I take your point.
Yeah, also, for the sake of the islanders that live here, I don't think you get much discount to get off the island if you live here to get back on, do you?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I travelled up, my son passed out of the army last year, and we went up, and we travelled up, and we had a little Peugeot. We still got a little Peugeot, and there we were, on waiting for the ferry, and in front of us was another little Peugeot, and they weren't going to the same place, but they had exactly the same car as us. There was a husband and wife. They were travelling up, and yet they were in front of us, and they were paying £20 more than us. We're on the same ferry, same time.
Yeah.
And you know, you think to yourself, well, how is that fair? You know, what's the difference? We got the same car, we're the same, you know, the same two people in the car. It's ridiculous. I think I was just going to make an analogy of when you listen to the Elmham Baton Hospice and they say they need X amount to survive per day. Maybe it'd be good if we had some kind of figures from you know, White Link and possibly Red Funnel as well, where you say, right, okay, to survive, just so you know, we need to make X amount of trips per day at this cost. Otherwise, we go under. Now, I'll make another analogy. They mentioned the milk today, which you're probably following the story on that as well, Keith. They did say today, and I was quite shocked that, you know, that supermarkets are drilling them into the ground. They're basically, the costs for the milk to provide a pint of milk are more than what they're actually getting for the milk. Well, that's not right. These figures have been made public today, so we all know that's not right. So maybe there'll be a lot of pressure put on supermarkets to not be so greedy. Otherwise, you're going to put these farmers out of work. Maybe we need the same kind of honesty and the same kind of transparency with, you know, the ferries. What do you think, Ian?
I agree. I mean, I do understand. I attended the scrutiny meetings when we had the ferry companies in, you know, and it was quite an eye-opener, really, of what the ferry companies have to cope with and their expenses and things like that. And I distinctly remember Jeff Lumley saying at the end to White Link, because we were so impressed with what they were doing, actually, you need to start shouting your message of what you do for the island.
It goes both ways, definitely. Yeah, it's not just let's have a go at them. Yeah. Hang on a minute, what are they providing? You know, is it a case of, oh, we're all moaning and groaning about the prices, but why do they need to be so high? I mean, still, people will still think, and I kind of think it as well, they've probably got a load of greedy shareholders that's the reason why the prices need to be so high. But let's know that before we actually say it. Facts on the table. Hey, look, thanks for your call, Keith.
Yeah. Okay, my friend.
See you soon. Cheers now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, I've got a question here from, you probably know him, Kevin Barclay J.
All right.
I bet you've had a tussle with him over the years.
Yes, of course.
Okay, Kevin says, I would like to ask you how you felt over the last 10 years as a councillor in Sandown, sitting back and watching all the rubbish happen. I've cleaned this up. The rubbish happened. Congratulations on being a community bus driver and probably the best of the councillors we have. But I couldn't sleep at night if I had overseen this vandalism of our town.
Well, what I'd say to Kevin is I haven't sat back for the last 10 years, quite frankly. I would say that actually only half of Sandown is mine, and every development or derelict building or whatever that's been in my ward, I have been in touch with the owners, I've been in touch with the developers and the planners, and I try to get them all talking together. And actually, I feel, for my bit, I've been pretty successful. I know we have some horrors in town, and I've even sort of stepped over the boundary and tried to figure out what the problem is and spoken to the owners of those particular buildings. So, you know, I would say I have not sat back for 10 years. I have been trying. You can only do the best you can. You can't make planners give them planning permission. You can't make owners do this and do that. You know, it is their property, and you can only cajole them and plead with them and try and get everybody working together.
Okay.
And I've done that.
Okay. Well, I mean, Sandown is. I mean, let's be honest. It is a little bit in decline, isn't it?
Well, let's put that into perspective. We are currently going through a formulation of a plan, the Isle of Wight Council, called the Bay Area Action Plan. And at the last meeting, the council officer who's dealing with it, he said to us, he said, you know, you keep going on about Sandown. He said, but if I was to tell you that when you look at the number of closed shops in Sandown and compare it with the number of percentage of closed shops in Shanklin, actually Sandown's doing better. Okay. Right. And it was something like 7.8 to 8.2, you know. So there wasn't a great difference, but when you get all the constant criticism for Sandown, and actually it's better than the next town.
I popped over to Sandown because I believe in looking after local companies.
Yeah.
We've started up the program we mentioned earlier on, the 4Ps. We needed some new computers, so we went to White Office. Okay, they're in Sandown High Street. Okay, and I was talking to Justin in there, and you know, he was kind of concerned the way that Sandown was going, the High Street was going, and so on. We go to Sandown Pets as well. We go in there as well because obviously they advertise with us, so we go all the way across to Sandown to, and they kind of tell us these things, that they're not happy with the way that it's going, it's not looking too good, and what's being done. Now, I drove to Sandown very recently, and it was in the last sort of 6 weeks. I've also been to Ryde, and I used to live in Ryde. I lived in Ryde for about 10 years, and it seemed like they waited for me to leave, and then they tarted the place up. You go to Ryde Seafront now, and it looks really, really good. And I'm just thinking, is there the same kind of funds available? I mean, how does it all work? I mean, was Ryde a special case? They're getting the funds spent on it?
Yes, it was.
So when's Sandown's turn then?
Unfortunately, that funding stream dried up. Ryde, I think, got specific funding, and that was in place, I think, before I was even elected. That project had started, and I had sort of many discussions with the project manager, who was specifically looking at Ryde and improving Ryde, and you know, you will remember the interchange projects and all that sort of stuff, you know. And then we had specific money to do all of those things.
Right.
But that never went anywhere else on the island. That was specifically for
Ryde. Which is
a shame. I can't remember, you know, what the scheme was called. But, I mean, we councillors have been working on Sandown, and you know, and I could take you along now. I think Sandown now is on the cusp of regeneration. Let me start the Grand Hotel, okay?
Yeah,
one end of the island.
Before you go, let me just ask who's on the line there. Hi, who's this?
Good afternoon, chaps.
Good afternoon, Pete. Do you mind if Ian tells us about the Grand Hotel in Sandown first of all?
Do.
Okay, Grand Hotel, new planning application in. Indications are, will be recommended for approval. Okay, we let's go along White City. Okay,
yeah.
Planning permission has been granted, so it is all happening. Go along Savoy Courts, the one on the corner. Okay, it has been a horrendous situation, but I've been to see the owner, and I sit there and I listen to what he has to say, and some logic in what he says. You know, he's not the ogre. It needs heads, basically, to get together. And that is happening now, okay? So that's in progress.
It's good
you
things
go along
coming
to
out of this.
A social club, that's been refurbished, rebuilt now. the hotel that recently caught fire, you know,
yeah,
already has planning permission to be redeveloped. So it is all about to happen.
There's lots of positive things.
Yes, there
is. Good. I'm glad you came in. I'm glad you've said that. Because if one thing comes out of this, I know there's a number of people that have messaged me now and they're concerned with Sandown and how it looks. But I don't want to go on too much about that. I've got some messages here to read up, which I will towards the end. But Pete's been hanging on. So thanks for hanging on, Pete.
That's all right. Ian, you're definitely, I go along with what Kevin said, you're unquestionably one of the best councillors. I think you're a cracking guy. And it does surprise me a little bit that you are a member of the Nasty Party. Because you don't fit the mould, do you?
Maybe the party has got the wrong image, Pete.
Well, they definitely have got the wrong image, haven't they? I mean, if all the Tories sort of came across as intelligent and as forward-thinking and sort of like a community spirited as you do, the Tories would be laughing all the way to the next general election. But, of course, they're not full of people like you, are they? They're full of people like Cameron and Osborne.
Well, it takes all sorts, don't you? If you look at any party, you have a cross-section of personalities. And there are many things, Pete, that, you know, David Cameron stands up and says, and I think the man's puddled. You know, I don't agree with that.
On that subject, before we move on, what he said the other day about he takes his orders from the British people when talking about Barroso making his threats against him, as usual. I mean, did you sort of fall off your chair at that point?
Well,
I've got
to say, this whole immigration thing. You know, I think to myself, we can't have it both ways. You know, I've heard David Cameron say, we want to control our borders. Fine. I think that's pretty much what everybody wants in the UK. We want to be able to control our borders. And then in the next breath, he says, I agree with the concept of free movement of labour. To me, they're contradictory statements.
Yeah, that's what you know. It's all going round in circles.
Yeah,
isn't it?
No, I agree.
It's always vote for me at the next general election, and I might do something for you. I might take you notice. It was the idea that he takes his orders from the British people, when in actual fact he routinely ignores the clearly expressed views of the British people, and that just happens all the time. And it's not just him; it's all of them. It's the whole political establishment. Yeah. They all do the same thing.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Pete, because you're right. It is all of them. I think. My feeling about this is that with the growing support for UKIP, it's actually made all of our politicians actually sit up and take notice that actually the British people have had enough. You know, they don't want to be dictated to time and time again. They actually want to have a say. They want to be able to say, no, I don't want to do that. I think that message is getting through across the political spectrum, you know, not just David Cameron.
I think you're right.
What the most worrying thing about UKIP is,
go on,
is that it's giving people false hope. People are thinking, oh, well, here's a political party that's listening to the will of the people. In actual fact, they're the most rabid bunch of monetarists going. And Nigel Farage is made absolutely clear that Margaret Thatcher was his hero, and he is her man. He's things are going to get far, far worse under UKIP than they are under the Conservative Party.
Well, you can see Nigel is playing to his audience, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, and you can see that. But there's an awful lot of people who agree with him. I'm just going to tell you something. People have come to me, Sandown people have come to me and asked me, will you stand for UKIP? You know, and I think, you know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Conservative, but they want me.
I bet that was Phil, wasn't it? I bet that was Phil.
You know,
throw your lot in with a bunch of Polish fascists, though?
I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Conservative. You know, that's it, Pete.
Yeah, but in the words of Al Murray last week, you Conservatives never wanted to conserve anything, and the Labour Party have never done a day's work in their life.
There's an item on the news today. I thought it was very telling about the state we're in. It was Homebase. The DIY store is closing a quarter of its shops. And the reason they put forward as the main reason they're not getting people through the door and spending money in their tills is because the younger generation who are just teaming up now, you know, Mr. and Mrs., they decide they're going to set up home together. That generation the sort of early 20-somethings, they don't have the same skills as their parents had where it comes to DIY.
Mm.
Now, isn't that telling? That
yeah.
people in their 20s are far less likely to knock down a brick wall and build it again, or sort of rip out a dodgy sort of load of floorboards and replace them with new. They're far less likely to do that because they haven't had that sort of education at school. Because we've lost for the most part. I mean, take my old school, for instance. It had a whole suite of workshops, metal workshops, woodwork.
Yes, workshop, only mine.
Needlework workshops. Yeah. And it was a major thing that we used to get taught at school. Then those workshops were taken out. They were taken away, and a far lesser alternative was put in place. It didn't get anything like the education you once did. The kids at the same school I used to go to, they're not getting the same skills taught to them that my generation got. And that filters through to someone like Homebase having to close its shops because young people aren't any good at wielding a chisel.
Hmm.
It really says a lot, doesn't it?
Well, I mean... We must be about the same age, then, Pete.
I think we are.
I mean,
1956 vintage. What are you?
50.
I
look at my school days, and we did carpentry, we did metalwork, and you know, machine shops, all that sort of stuff. We did, and we you know made things out of wood and flower pot stands and you know all that sort of stuff. But I'll tell you what else happened. Was my parents used to get me to help them, and they taught me wallpapering and painting and all that sort of stuff. And I just wonder if that happens these days, you know. So, and they taught me
not
to
enough.
Cook as well. They taught me to cook as well.
Good,
you know,
not
all that
enough,
sort of
though.
Stuff.
You're absolutely right. Hey, Pete, we've got to go because we've got to take a quick commercial break.
All right, mate.
Thanks for your call.
Good to speak to you, Ian.
Yeah, Andrew.
Cheers, bye.
I just want to read this out before we go into the break. Andrew's been in touch. She says, I speak to so many tourists that come from the mainland and the majority have nothing nice to say about Sandown. It's a stunning location which needs people with vision to bring the place back up to scratch. You're saying that's happening now?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
But
so watch this space.
Right.
How long is it going to take?
30 seconds.
No, I don't mean that quick.
Oh, right.
I mean like putting Sandown on the back on the map.
And within the next couple of years, those buildings should be sorted out.
Good. Excellent.
Okay. All right.
30 seconds.
Right. Okay. What Sandown needs is business investment, okay? Because that's what makes the world go around. Fact of life, okay? There's no money coming from government and all these other places, no wild grants. Business investment. And business people need business confidence. And all the time people are running Sandown down, business people are going, well, why should we invest in a town where the residents run it down themselves?
Good point.
Yeah,
we've got
to stop doing that.
It's 10 to 1. We'll be back with more in a mo.
Have your say on the Isle of Wight phone-in, brought to you in association with White Fibre. It's not only super fast, it's super unlimited too. Go to www.whitefibre.com.
White Office Equipment Computer Repair is all you need to have your computer or laptop repaired from just £20 plus VAT. This includes all labour for as long as it takes us. Just drop your laptop or computer into our high street store at your convenience and collect it when it's been repaired. No need to book. Come and see us at the High Street, Sandown, opposite Sainsbury's, or call 400045. That's 400045.
White Crystal is an Isle of Wight charity selling still and carbonated spring water products, flavoured and water coolers, to fund care services, employment and life-enhancing opportunities for people with a range of disabilities. To see their fabulous wide range of products, go to www.whitecrystal.org.uk or call to place an order on 01983 520 128. That's 01983 520 128.
My name's Tony Bray. Several years ago, I read Maggie Curry's book, What You Believe Creates Your Reality. It was a turning point for me, and since then, I've achieved things I thought I would never be able to achieve. I've lost several stone in weight. I've managed to swim across the Solent twice. I've raised £16,000 for motor neuron disease. I've become the chairman of the association on the Isle of Wight, and all this started by just reading Maggie's book. I recommend you do so, and I recommend you speak to Maggie, because she will make a positive difference to your life. I totally guarantee it.
Contact me today on 01983 754 666 or email hello at maggiecurry.co.uk and let's start your life transformation.
Have your say on the Isle of Wight phone-in, brought to you in association with White Fibre. You can download all the movies, music and photos you like with no usage caps at breakneck speeds. Telephone them on 01983 240 240.
Now, my special guest this lunchtime is Councillor Ian Ward from Sandown, and we've got a couple of questions for you. Kevin's asked another. We've left the sticky ones till the end, Ian.
All right.
You've got 7 minutes of uncomfortable questions. All right. On a political note, as a supporter of Andrew Turner, how do you feel about his fellow Island Tories, the attacks on him and the attempts to get him removed?
Well, in any organisation, you're going to get people with differing views. And that's exactly what we have, people with differing views. You know, I had people saying to me a couple of years ago, Conservatives I'm talking about, said, our aim is to deselect Andrew Turner. Hoping maybe, that I was going to support them and join them. And I was horrified. I'm thinking to myself, I don't do that sort of thing.
No.
You know, just going back to my army background, loyalty is everything.
Sure.
If you can't be loyal, then you're a waste of space, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, not only that, you'll always be looking over your shoulder as well, because it will bite you on the backside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, for people to come out with things like that actually horrified me. And while Andrew is our MP and our prospective candidate, our candidate for the next election, he will have my 101%.
Okay, well, it's nice to hear, and I would imagine he's quite pleased about that as well. But what about the rest of us that are looking in and thinking, right, is there a split? How together are the Tories on the island?
There will always be those who, call it a split if you like, there will always be a section of any membership who don't want to support the main theme, if I can put it that way. And are those people still there? I don't know, but they're certainly quiet now. You know, we had some quite vocal meetings, and you know, I would say one member stood up and he said, "Look, Andrew Turner is our candidate. He's our MP. He is our candidate. We've all got to get behind him."
Okay.
It's as simple as that. And actually, the meeting was unanimous in doing that.
I think, obviously, there's been a lot of stories in the press the last 12 months. You say you're together now. You're a together party on the island. You're all one for all and so on.
Yeah. I mean, there are other people who potentially are candidates.
Okay.
But they're young people, comparatively young, and they will have their time. And there's two people out there I'm thinking of who would enjoy my support.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ready for a stinky question?
Go on, another one.
is David Pugh still pulling strings?
Is David Pugh still pulling strings? David Pugh is a person who, how can I put this, is deeply involved in the political world. Okay. Is he still pulling strings in the Isle of Wight Council, in the Conservative group? No, he isn't. You know. Yes, he will express his opinion.
Right.
But the group will actually say what they want to do.
Yeah.
And what David says is actually not really taken into account.
Okay,
because he's not part of our group.
He's not part of the group.
No.
Plus, I mean, he even gave up his, because he was a town councillor, wasn't he?
Yes.
And decided that he was going to step down from that.
Yeah.
The opinions that people have at the moment is that he's still meddling, still got his fingers in the pie. So that's not true.
Well, I think, I mean, we're, what, 18 months down line from the election now?
Yeah.
And at the beginning, I suspect that was, well, I know it was the case, that David would express his opinion. But the group has gone its own way.
Right.
Okay, and made its own decisions, and I think we're 18 months down the line now, and that is history, all of that.
Okay, because anything that I suppose would be seen as it would undermine Dave Stewart, for one, and obviously Andrew Turner as well. Ready for the stinkiest one of
Go
all?
On.
Okay, then. This is from Ali. Why did you allow Councillor Hollis to speak so chauvinistically to Councillor Baker Is it Baker? Baker
Julia
Smith?
Baker Smith.
Last week's full council meeting. Surely, as a chairman, you were there to preside and ensure that procedures are followed. This was a personal attack and blatant discrimination to a mother of young children by a county councillor. Councillor Ward should have stopped this. Why is there a need for party politics in local council? That's an even better question. Should not all elected members be there to do the best they can for the island residents who elected them? There's a couple of questions in there, but let's take the Julia Baker incident.
Right, okay.
How much power do you have as a chairman? Can you tell people to shut up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why didn't you then?
Okay, because what Richard Hollis was saying, what he was presenting, if I can put it that way, was his ability to do the job.
Okay.
Okay. He didn't say anything about Julia Baker Smith. You know, what Richard said, I have been planning for umpteen years or whatever it is. You know, I have the time to do this. I don't have any other commitments, so on and so forth. He didn't say anything else. But I think what Julia felt that he was having a go at her because she does have family commitments and so on and so forth. So I think it's a bit of sensitivity. That's okay. How I saw it. And the other thing is, when somebody's speaking, you don't know what they're going to say till they say it.
Sure.
You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. And I suppose when you're in the situation when somebody puts you on the spot and asks a question, like we just did, you know, we obviously have to be careful, but, you know, are people going to react in different ways?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, let's be honest. If there was anything untoward there, then that councillor Baker Smith could have made something of it, gone to the media and played the chauvinistic card. She hasn't, has she?
No, not as far as No, she hasn't. It's as simple as that. You know, I mean, Julia is a level-headed lady. There's no two ways about that. I have the greatest respect for her. You know, I don't think Julia's that way inclined.
Okay. Why is there a need for party politics in local council? Should not all elected members, elected councillors, be there to do the best they can for the Isle of Wight, who have actually elected them? I think that's a great question. It's a great point, too.
Okay, right. Let me give you an answer to that. My first, I'll answer it by asking another question. Are you saying
typical politician?
Are you saying that because you're a member of a political party, you're not doing the best for the island? Because I would totally refute that. You know, people become councillors because they do want to do their best for the island. Nobody, you know, really volunteers to come and be, you know, criticised and so on and so forth. You put yourself up because you want to help your community, and that's why I do it, and I'm pretty sure that's why the other 39 councillors do it. Okay, so I dispute the fact that because you're in a political party, you're not doing your best for the island. Okay, now, why do we have political parties? Now, if I can use another analogy here, let's say we're playing football. We've got a football team, okay? Members of a football team all pull together. They've all got the same objective. They're all going in the same direction. Okay? If you didn't have that team, if you had 11 individuals out there, how successful would you be? So I think that's my answer, really.
Okay.
People band together. Whatever colour, you know, you have your values and your aims. Otherwise, you wouldn't join a political party. And you band together because that's the most effective way of being successful.
Okay. I mean, that's a good answer. I don't necessarily agree with 100% of it, because I still believe that maybe if you took the politics out of local councils, you may, I mean, and there's a hypothetical question, I can make that statement and know that we're never ever going to get the opportunity to prove that could happen, but I still believe, and I hear a number of people say that, you know, if you took the politics out, maybe it would be a lot better, because you wouldn't feel like your hands are tied, you wouldn't have somebody slapping your wrist and saying, no, Tories don't do it that way. But what is interesting is a couple of weeks ago, was it last week, they voted on a wage structure.
Yeah.
And six Conservatives decided not to do, not to vote for the bringing the wage structure up to, within the council, up to livable wage.
Mm.
So that kind of suggests that what you're saying is kind of true, purely and simply because those Tories have decided to vote against the other Tories.
Okay.
So it's not quite so hands tied. You have to vote in a Tory way.
No, but you know, just if you brought that point up and said six didn't support it, but nine did. You know, so so there is no whip. And I feel irritated at times when people point it at Conservatives and saying, oh, you're all whipped, you do as you're told, etc., etc. Not like that at all. I tell you what, poor old Davy Pugh got an awful lot of flack. Do you know what? That man never, ever told Conservative members how to vote. Never. Okay? On one occasion, when we had this huge budget deficit, before we went in the council chamber, he said, if you're not going to support it, can you let me know before we go in? You know? So there was no huge whip. Let's say there was blood on the carpet at times. That's an exaggeration. But we used to argue. We had differences of opinion and what have you. But we did our best to resolve them and went on to the pitch to win, basically.
Do you know what? You've saved the best bit till last. we could have talked about that for a little bit longer. You've got to come back for a part two. Will you do that in a few weeks' time?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, look, Ian, thank you so much for coming in and giving us your time. It's been interesting. There's a young lady, I don't know whether did you have a question for Ian?
I had a few, yeah.
Go on, find
do we
your
have
best
enough
question.
Time?
Yes, we do. Just one quick question.
It's only
the Voxes next, they won't mind.
Mine's a little bit more light-hearted than the others.
Well, let's end on a light-hearted note then.
Is the food they feed you in the army really as bad as it sounds?
No, brilliant.
There you go, end up. Thank you for being there.